Chapters 1 to 10 of Confessions. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Jordan. Confessions by St. Augustine. Translated by Albert C. Outler. Book 10, Chapters 1 to 10. Book 10, Chapter 1. Let me know thee, O my knower, let me know thee even as I am known. O strength of my soul, enter it, and prepare it for thyself, that thou mayest have and hold it, without spot or blemish. This is my hope, therefore have I spoken, and in this hope I rejoice whenever I rejoice aright. But as for the other things of this life, they deserve our lamentations less. The more we lament them, and some should be lamented all the more, the less men care for them. For see, thou desirest truth, and he who does the truth comes to the light. This is what I wish to do through confession in my heart before thee, and in my writings before many witnesses. Chapter 2. And what is there in me that could be hidden from thee, Lord, to whose eyes the abysses of man's conscience are naked, even if I were unwilling to confess it to thee? In doing so, I would only hide thee from myself, not myself from thee. But now that my groaning is witness to the fact that I am dissatisfied with myself, thou shinest forth and satisfiest. Thou art beloved and desired, so that I blush for myself and renounce myself and choose thee, for I can neither please thee nor myself except in thee. To thee, then, O Lord, I am laid bare, whatever I am, and I have already said with what profit I may confess to thee. I do not do with words and sounds of the flesh, but with the words of the soul, and with the sound of my thoughts, which thy ear knows. For when I am wicked, to confess to thee means nothing less than to be dissatisfied with myself. But when I am truly devout, it means nothing less than not to attribute my virtue to myself, because thou, O Lord, blessest the righteous, but first thou justifiest him while he is yet ungodly. My confession, therefore, O my God, is made unto thee silently in thy sight, and yet not silently. As far as sound is concerned, it is silent, but in strong affection it cries aloud, for neither I give voice to something that sounds right to men, which thou hast not heard from me before, nor dost thou hear anything of the kind from me, which thou didst not first say to me. Chapter 3. What is it to me that men should hear my confessions as if it were they who were going to cure all my infirmities? People are curious to know the lives of others, but slow to correct their own. Why are they anxious to hear from me what I am, when they are unwilling to hear from thee what they are? And how can they tell when they hear what I say about myself, whether I speak the truth, since no man knows what is in a man, save the spirit of the man which is in him? But if they were to hear from thee something concerning themselves, they would not be able to say, "The Lord is lying." For what does it mean to hear from thee about themselves, but to know themselves? And who is he that knows himself and says, "This is false," unless he himself is lying? But because love believes all things, at least among those who are bound together in love by its bonds, I confess to thee, O Lord, so that men may also hear, for I cannot prove to them that I confess the truth, yet those whose ears love opens to me will believe me. But wilt thou, O my inner physician, make clear to me what profit I am to gain in doing this? For the confessions of my past sins, which thou hast forgiven and covered, that thou mightest make me blessed in thee, transforming my soul by faith and thy sacrament, when they are read and heard, may stir up the heart, so that it will stop dozing along in despair, saying, "I cannot," but will instead awake in the love of thy mercy, and the sweetness of thy grace, by which he that is weak is strong, provided he is made conscious of his own weakness. And will it please those who are good to hear about the past errors of those who are now freed from them? And they will take delight, not because they are errors, but because they were and are so no longer. What profit, then, O Lord my God, to whom my conscience makes her daily confession, far more confident in the hope of thy mercy than in her own innocence, what profit is there, I ask thee, in confessing to men in thy presence through this book, both what I am now as well as what I have been? For I have seen and spoken of my harvest of things past, but what am I now, at this very moment of making my confessions? Many different people desire to know, both those who know me and those who do not know me. Some have heard about me or from me, but their ear is not close to my heart, where I am whatever it is that I am. They have the desire to hear me confess what I am within, where they can neither extend eye, nor ear, nor mind. They desire as those willing to believe, but will they understand? For the love by which they are good tells them that I am not lying in my confessions, and the love in them believes me. Chapter 4. But for what profit do they desire this? Will they wish me happiness when they learn how near I have approached thee by thy gifts? And will they pray for me when they learn how much I am still kept back by my own weight? To such as these I will declare myself. For it is no small profit, O Lord my God, that many people should give thanks to thee on my account, and that many should entreat thee for my sake. Let the brotherly soul love in me what thou teachest him should be loved, and let him lament in me what thou teachest him should be lamented. Let it be the soul of a brother that does this, and not a stranger, not one of those strange children whose mouths speak vanity, and whose right hand is the right hand of falsehood. But let my brother do it, who, when he approves of me, rejoices for me, but when he disapproves of me, is sorry for me, because whether he approves or disapproves, he loves me. To such I will declare myself. Let them be refreshed by my good deeds, and sigh over my evil ones. My good deeds are thy acts and thy gifts. My evil ones are my own faults and thy judgment. Let them breathe expansively at the one, and sigh over the other, and let hymns and tears ascend in thy sight, out of their brotherly hearts, which are thy senses. And, O Lord, who takest delight in the incense of thy holy temple, have mercy upon me according to thy great mercy, for thy name's sake. And do not, on any account whatever, abandon what thou hast begun in me. Go on, rather, to complete what is yet imperfect in me. This, then, is the fruit of my confessions, not of what I was, but of what I am, that I may not confess this before thee alone, in a secret exultation, with trembling, and a secret sorrow, with hope, but also in the ears of the believing sons of men, who are the companions of my joy and sharers of my mortality, my fellow citizens and fellow pilgrims, those who have gone before and those who are to follow after, as well as the comrades of my present way. These are thy servants, my brothers, whom thou desirest to be thy sons. They are my masters, whom thou hast commanded me to serve, if I desire to live with and in thee. But this, thy word, would mean little to me, if it commanded in words alone, without thy prevenient action. I do this, then, both in act and word. I do this under thy wings, in a danger too great to risk, if it were not that under thy wings my soul is subject to thee, and my weakness known to thee. I am insufficient, but my Father liveth for ever, and my defendant is sufficient for me. For he is the selfsame who didst beget me, and who watcheth over me. Thou art the selfsame who art all my good. Thou art the omnipotent who art with me, even before I am with thee. To those, therefore, whom thou commandest me to serve, I will declare, not what I was, but what I now am, and what I will continue to be. But I do not judge myself. Thus, therefore, let me be heard. Chapter 5. For it is thou, O Lord, who judgest me. For although no man knows the things of a man save the spirit of the man which is in him, yet there is something of man which the spirit of the man which is in him does not know itself. But thou, O Lord, who madest him, knowest him completely. And even I, though in thy sight I despise myself, and count myself but dust and ashes, even I know something about thee which I do not know about myself. And it is certain that, now we see through a glass darkly, not yet face to face. Therefore, as long as I journey away from thee, I am more present with myself than with thee. I know that thou canst not suffer violence, but I myself do not know what temptations I can resist and what I cannot. But there is hope, because thou art faithful, and thou wilt not allow us to be tempted beyond our ability to resist, but wilt, with the temptation, also make a way of escape, that we may be able to bear it. I would therefore confess what I know about myself. I will also confess what I do not know about myself. What I do know of myself, I know from thy enlightening of me, and what I do not know of myself, I will continue not to know until the time when my darkness is as the noonday in thy sight. Chapter 6. It is not with a doubtful consciousness, but one fully certain that I love thee, O Lord. Thou hast smitten my heart with thy word, and I have loved thee. And see also the heaven and the earth and all that is in them. On every side they tell me to love thee, and they do not cease to tell this to all men, so that they are without excuse. Wherefore, still more deeply wilt thou have mercy on whom thou wilt have mercy, and compassion on whom thou wilt have compassion. For otherwise, both heaven and earth would tell abroad thy praises to deaf ears. But what is it that I love in loving thee? Not physical beauty, nor the splendor of time, nor the radiance of the light, so pleasant to our eyes, nor the sweet melodies of the various kinds of songs, nor the fragrant smell of the flowers and ointments and spices, not manna and honey, not the limbs embraced in physical love. It is not these I love when I love my God. Yet it is true that I love a certain kind of light and sound and fragrance and food and embrace in loving my God, who is the light and sound and fragrance and food and embracement of my inner man, where that light shines into my soul which no place can contain, where time does not snatch away the lovely sound, where no breeze disperses the sweet fragrance, where no eating diminishes the food there provided, and where there is an embrace that no satiety comes to sunder. This is what I love when I love my God. And what is this God? I asked the earth, and it answered, I am not he. And everything in the earth made the same confession. I asked the sea, and the deeps, and the creeping things, and they replied, We are not your God, seek above us. I asked the fleeting winds, and the whole air with its inhabitants answered. Anaximenes was deceived, I am not God. I asked the heavens, the sun, moon, and stars, and they answered, Neither are we the God whom you seek. And I replied to all these things, which stand around the door of my flesh, You have told me about my God, that you are not he. Tell me something about him. And with a loud voice they all cried out, He made us. My question had come from my observation of them, and their reply came from their beauty of order. And I turned my thoughts into myself, and said, Who are you? And I answered, A man. For see, there is in me both a body and a soul, the one without, the other within. In which of these should I have sought my God, whom I had already sought with my body from earth to heaven, as far as I was able to send those messengers, the beams of my eyes? But the inner part is the better part, for to it, as both ruler and judge, all these messengers of the senses report the answers of heaven and earth, and all the things therein. Who said, We are not God, but he made us. My inner man knew these things through the ministry of the outer man, and I, the inner man, knew all this. I, the soul, through the senses of my body, I asked the whole frame of earth about my God, and it answered, I am not he, but he made me. Is not this beauty of form visible to all whose senses are unimpaired? Why then does it not say the same things to all? Animals, both small and great, see it, but they are unable to interrogate its meaning, because their senses are not endowed with the reason that would enable them to judge the evidence which the senses report. But man can interrogate it, so that the invisible things of him are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. But men love these created things too much. They are brought into subjection to them, and as subjects are not able to judge. None of these created things reply to their questioners unless they can make rational judgments. The creatures will not alter their voice, that is, their beauty of form, if one man simply sees what another both sees and questions, so that the world appears one way to this man and another to that. It appears the same way to both, but it is mute to this one, and it speaks to that one. Indeed, it actually speaks to all, but only they understand it who compare the voice received from without with the truth within. For the truth says to me, neither heaven nor earth nor anybody is your God. Their very nature tells this to the one who beholds them. They are a mass, less in part than the whole. Now, O my soul, you are my better part, and to you I speak. Since you animate the whole mass of your body, giving it life whereas no body furnishes life to a body, but your God is the life of your life. Chapter 7. What is it then that I love when I love my God? Who is he that is beyond the topmost point of my soul? Yet by this very soul will I mount up to him. I will soar beyond that power of mine, by which I am united to the body, and by which the whole structure of it is filled with life. Yet it is not by that vital power that I find my God, for then the horse and the mule that have no understanding also might find him, since they have the same vital power by which their bodies also live. But there is, besides the power by which I animate my body, another by which I endow my flesh with sense, a power that the Lord hath provided for me, commanding that the eye is not to hear and the ear is not to see, but that I am to see by the eye and to hear by the ear, and giving to each of the other senses its own proper place and function, through the diversity of which I, the single mind, act. I will soar also beyond this power of mine, for the horse and mule have this too, for they also perceive through their bodily senses. Chapter 8. I will soar then beyond the power of my nature also, still rising by degrees toward him who made me. And I enter the fields and spacious halls of memory, where are stored as treasures the countless images that have been brought into them from all manner of things by the senses. There in the memory is likewise stored what we cogitate, either by enlarging or reducing our perceptions, or by altering one way or another those things which the senses have made contact with, and everything else that has been entrusted to it and stored up in it, which oblivion has not yet swallowed up and buried. When I go into this storehouse, I ask that what I want should be brought forth. Some things appear immediately, but others require to be searched for longer, and then dragged out, as it were, from some hidden recess. Other things hurry forth in crowds. On the other hand, and while something else is sought and inquired for, they leap into view as if to say, "Is it not we, perhaps?" These I brush away with the hand of my heart from the face of my memory, until finally the thing I want makes its appearance out of its secret cell. Some things suggest themselves without effort, and in continuous order, just as they are called for. The things that come first give place to those that follow, and in so doing are treasured up again to be forthcoming when I want them. All of this happens when I repeat a thing from memory. All these things, each one of which came into memory in its own particular way, are stored up separately and under the general categories of understanding. For example, light and all colors and forms of bodies came in through the eyes, sounds of all kinds by the ears, all smells by the passages of the nostrils, all flavors by the gate of the mouth, by the sensation of the whole body, there is brought in what is hard or soft, hot or cold. Smooth or rough, heavy or light, whether external or internal to the body. The vast cave of memory, with its numerous and mysterious recesses, receives all these things and stores them up to be recalled and brought forth when required. Each experience enters by its own door and is stored up in the memory. And yet, the things themselves do not enter it, but only the images of the things perceived are there for thought to remember. And who can tell how these images are formed, even if it is evident which of the senses brought with perception in and stored it up? For even when I am in darkness and silence, I can bring out colours in my memory if I wish, and discern between black and white and the other shades as I wish. And at the same time, sounds do not break in and disturb what is drawn in by my eyes, and which I am considering, because the sounds which are also there are stored up, as it were, apart. And these too I can summon if I please, and they are immediately present in memory. And though my tongue is at rest and my throat silent, yet I can sing as I will, and those images of colour, which are as truly present as before, do not interpose themselves or interrupt while another treasure, which had flowed in through the ears, is being thought about. Similarly, all the other things that were brought in and heaped up by all the other senses I can recall at my pleasure. And I distinguish the scent of lilies from that of violets while actually smelling nothing, and I prefer honey to mead, a smooth thing to a rough, even though I am neither tasting nor handling them, but only remembering them. All this I do within myself in that huge hall of my memory, for in it heaven, earth, and sea are present to me, and whatever I can cogitate about them, except what I have forgotten. There also I meet myself and recall myself. What, when, or where did a thing, and how I felt when I did it? There are all the things that I remember, either having experienced them myself, or been told about them by others. Out of the same storehouse with these past impressions, I can construct now this, now that image of things that I either have experienced, or have believed on the basis of experience. And from these I can further construct future actions, events, and hopes, that I can meditate on all these things as if they were present. I will do this or that, I say to myself, in that vast recess of my mind, with its full share of so many and such great images, and this or that will follow upon it. Oh, that this or that could happen! God prevent this or that! I speak to myself in this way, and when I speak, the images of what I am speaking about are present out of the same store of memory, and if the images were absent, I could say nothing at all about them. Great is this power of memory, exceedingly great, O my God! A large and boundless inner hall, who has plumbed the depths of it? Yet it is a power of my mind, and it belongs to my nature, but I do not myself grasp all that I am. Thus the mind is far too narrow to contain itself. But where can that part of it be which it does not contain? Is it outside and not in itself? How can it be, then, that the mind cannot grasp itself? A great marvel rises in me, astonishment seizes me. Men go forth to marvel at the heights of mountains and the huge waves of the sea, the broad flow of the rivers, the vastness of the ocean, the orbits of the stars, and yet they neglect to marvel at themselves. Nor do they wonder how it is that, when I spoke of all these things, I was not looking at them with my eyes, and yet I could not have spoken about them had it not been that I was actually seeing within, in my memory, those mountains and waves and rivers and stars which I have seen, and that ocean which I believe in, and with the same vast spaces between them as when I saw them outside me. But when I saw them outside me, I did not take them into me by seeing them, and the things themselves are not inside me, but only their images. And yet I knew through which physical sense each experience had made an impression on me. Chapter 9. And yet, this is not all that the unlimited capacity of my memory stores up. In memory there are also all that one has learned of the liberal sciences, and has not forgotten, removed still further, so to say, into an inner place, which is not a place. Of these things it is not the images that are retained, but the things themselves. For what literature and logic are, and what I know about how many different kinds of questions there are, all these are stored in my memory as they are, so that I have not taken in the image and left the thing outside. It is not as though a sound had sounded and passed away, like a voice heard by the ear which leaves a trace, by which it can be called into memory again, as if it were still sounding in mind, while it did so no longer outside. Nor is it the same as an odour which, even after it has passed and vanished into the wind, affects the sense of smell, which then conveys into the memory the image of the smell, which is what we recall and recreate. or like food which, once in the belly, surely now has no taste, and yet does have a kind of taste in the memory, or like anything that is felt by the body through the sense of touch, which still remains as an image in the memory after the external object is removed. For these things themselves are not put into the memory, only the images of them are gathered with a marvelous quickness and stored, as it were, in the most wonderful filing system, and are thence produced in a marvelous way by the act of remembering. Chapter 10. But now when I hear that there are three kinds of questions, whether a thing is, what it is, of what kind it is, I do indeed retain the images of the sounds of which these words are composed, and I know that those sounds pass through the air with a noise and now no longer exist. But the things themselves which are signified by those sounds I never could reach by any sense of the body, nor see them at all except by my mind. And what I have stored in my memory was not their signs, but the things signified. How they got into me, let them tell who can, for I examine all the gates of my flesh, but I cannot find the door by which any of them entered. For the eyes say, if they were coloured, we reported that. The ears say, if they gave any sound, we gave notice of that. The nostrils say, if they smell, they passed in by us. The sense of taste says, if they have no flavour, don't ask me about them. The sense of touch says, if it had no bodily mass, I did not touch it, and if I never touched it, I gave no report about it. Whence and how did these things enter into my memory? I do not know. For when I first learned them, it was not that I believed them on the credit of another man's mind, but I recognized them in my own, and I saw them as true, took them into my mind, and laid them up, so to say, where I could get at them again whenever I willed. There they were, then, even before I learned them. But they were not in my memory. Where were they, then? How does it come about that when they were spoken of, I could acknowledge them and say, so it is true, unless they were already in the memory, though far back and hidden, as it were, in the more secret caves, so that unless they had been drawn out by the teaching of another person, I should perhaps never have been able to think of them at all. End of Book 10, Chapters 1 to 10.